everybody. Welcome back to Morning Coffee with your host, Rick Alexander. Today, I have an interview with Julianne Dallas. Julianne is a trauma-informed life coach helping military and veterans get unstuck and find happiness again. Using polyvagal and attachment theory, she helps her clients create new life experiences while healing the root cause of their suffering for lifelong change. Being in a relationship with a former Tier 1 operator in Canada gave her the exposure she needed on both sides of the relationship to realize how pervasive trauma patterns can be and how they can disrupt all areas of our lives. She noticed that no one was really teaching how to heal, understand, and get past these unconscious patterns to create better relationships in every area of their lives. It took her own investment in a one-on-one coach to understand how her trauma patterns had held her back from not only getting what she wanted in life, but also making the impact she desired. Because she had searched so hard for so long for a solution to her suffering and found the missing link in trauma work, she created a way for an often overlooked demographic to heal the root cause of their suffering. And in that, Body by Jules was born, where she now has a thriving practice working one-on-one with clients to help them finally get unstuck and find happiness again. Of course, I will link up her Instagram in the show notes of this episode. So if you do listen to this and you want to work with Julianne or just support what she's doing, the one thing that I will say is her Instagram is incredible. Like, she just offers a lot of really great insights, and she did not disappoint with this conversation. She is super well thought out. She does a really good job helping people understand how their trauma patterns are unconsciously showing up in their lives. And though we use veterans as the center point for this conversation, it's something that I think really does apply to all people, because we all have some sort of attachment style. And in this episode, Julianne really goes through them and helps me understand them better, and hopefully you as well. I'm sure somewhere in here, you'll see where you show up. And then from there, it's just a matter of beginning to deduce those patterns and then starting to work through them. Again, this was a really fruitful conversation. Without further ado, on to the show.
Being in this really powerful relationship that meant a lot to me, it was motivation to kind of figure out, okay, well, what's really going on here? Like, something is not working. And I've certainly looked for answers, and there's a missing link here. Mm. So when I actually hired my own trauma-informed life coach, and that was the missing piece, like, just boom, understanding the nervous system, trauma responses, trauma patterns. And then because, you know, that relationship was such a huge catalyst for my own growth, I really saw that there was a demographic of people who were just being overlooked, right? And just becoming like a number because, oh, well, they're a veteran, or, you know, that's just what it's like being in the military, right? And there was this like huge gap in an understanding of what was really going on. And I didn't see anyone really teaching or helping people in that field of, like, let's deal with the root cause here. So that's really where I got into the military and veteran space. And it's like a really awesome niche. Like, the people that I work with are just so ready. You know, they're just looking for answers, and they, you know, go into the VA for answers and having all this bureaucracy and red tape. And it's like just crazy making, right? And then it's like, actually, let's, you know, have the 30,000 foot view of what's going on and then deal with the root cause so you can actually start getting somewhere in your life.
Yeah, that resonates because, so I spent 12 years in the military in a special forces capacity as well. And so when I got out, I started looking at the VA stuff. By the way, we're in it, I'm recording. Right. I started looking at all of the VA stuff. And what I realized is, like, okay, there was something they were offering, right? Which is money, which is like conventional, like, let's just throw things at it that textbooks say we should throw at it. But then there was also this idea of something you mentioned, which I would love to get into here, which is all of the unconscious patterns. Like, I just looked at my life as these repeating cycles. Like, relationships would get to a certain point and then end. Like, certain business ventures would get to a certain point and then end. And I was like, I felt as though I was stuck in a repeating cycle that the VA system was not willing to speak to for whatever reason. And so could you elaborate a bit on what you mean by like unconscious patterns? I kind of want to just deduce whether we're talking about the same stuff or not.
Yeah, absolutely. So in my experience dealing with, just from what I know on the periphery of the VA, they tend to have kind of an outside in approach, like really dealing with symptoms and trying to eliminate symptoms so that someone can just get on with their daily life. But like you said, I mean, there's these unconscious patterns that seem to reflect in not just personal relationships, but in your relationship to everything. Like you said, you know, with businesses, with relationships, you know, a lot of times it comes up with, you know, fitness and health, right? These on off patterns, or this, you know, this strange cycle that seems to be repeating. And it's really rooted in, you know, people's nervous system and how we actually are designed to function as human beings, a part of the mammal community, right? So we have, are you familiar with polyvagal theory?
A little bit. My fiance teaches it quite a bit, and so I should be more familiar with it, but do you want to talk about it a little?
Yeah, so it's a fairly new area of study, which is why, you know, things like the VA and just modern psychiatry aren't really caught up with it, because they're really slow to jump onto new, you know, new developments in the sphere. But it's basically a theory that, you know, we have different parts of our nervous system. So the old paradigm is fight or flight or shut down or freeze, right? So the problem with that is people understand what fight and flight feels like, right? To be mobilized, they get that, right? And a lot of people also get what it feels like to be shut down. But in the absence of that, when they're trying to relax, they just feel like, okay, if I'm not in fight flight, I should just be able to relax. Polyvagal theory actually talks about another part of the nervous system, which is your ventral vagal nerve, that actually needs to be stimulated in order to feel present, safe, and connected in the body, right? So a lot of times people think they're relaxing, and really they're just kind of meditating on this fight or flight response or freeze response.
They're almost disassociated from the bodily response, essentially.
Yeah, kind of. And they have this cognitive dissonance because their thought life is telling them they should be able to relax. They should be able to enjoy things. They should be able to, you know, insert whatever, but their ventral vagal nerve is not activated. So they're basically, you know, disassociated from what it feels like to be present within their body, because their body biologically is not able to do that.
I relate to that because I've been doing some breath work, and I noticed in it, when my body became sympathetic, I was having a difficult time keeping my awareness from leaving my body. It was like my awareness was like wanting to be above this sympathetic response.
Yeah, totally. And there's, you know, there's so many, the thing about the ventral vagal nerve is that that's where we have our full range of emotional experience, is when we have a healthy, activated ventral vagal system. But that needs to be activated through safe and consistent connection with other human beings, right? So in meditating, it's super common as well. Like if you are feeling that presence, you're going to start to feel things that you maybe never have felt before.
Yeah, you're going to cry.
Yeah. But sometimes that can feel really unsafe, right? Because it's a totally brand new experience for your nervous system. And so what can happen is, out of self-protection, suddenly that ventral vagal system will shut off and you'll go into that sympathetic response, even when your intention is to sit with your feelings and sit with yourself and try to figure out what's going on, right? Because you're having this new emotional experience and your system just tells you, hey, that's not safe, you're checking out, right? And so that can be like a form of a pattern that tends to repeat itself, is that, you know, avoidant response of neurocepting some kind of danger, whether that's part of your internal experiences or externally. And your response, which is probably all you've ever known and learned in early childhood, is to, you know, check out or disassociate or avoid or self-sabotage or whatever, you know, your pattern may be.
Yeah. So I've noticed in a lot of what you post online, it seems that a lot of these patterns you are tying back to this physiological response of us not being able to stay safe, connected. And I'd be curious to know whether you thought that, can connection with other people trigger this as well, right? Because perhaps there's a feeling of closeness you get with somebody. And a lot of people destroy their lives when they get close with somebody.
Well, I'm so glad that you brought that up, because that's one of the hallmarks of part of these patterns, is really a massive fear of intimacy that is rooted in that physiological response, right? So when people get close, that's when their nervous system gets activated or triggered or whatever, and they go, whoa, this is unsafe, I'm out, right? And that out, can I swear on here?
Oh yeah, this is CNN, say whatever you want.
So the out, or that fuck it button, is really like, it's an unconscious response of getting close to intimacy, right? So the thing is that the physiological response of it is a part of our mammalian attachment system, right? So it's really, it's part of our autonomic nervous system. And it's really how we relate, not only to ourselves, other people, jobs, like we said in the beginning, but also just life itself. Like, it is the internal wiring of our relational capacity in life, right? So it controls so much, and it is in the autonomic system. So in early childhood, this autonomic system is designed and developed based on the climate and the atmosphere of the relationship with you and your primary caregivers. So it's a really brilliant, awesome survival strategy to develop this pattern of relating so that you can stay in consistent relationship with whoever's taking care of you when you're pretty much helpless, right? And that's a mammalian response. Like, we all mammals have that, and it's not an option, right? It's a biological imperative for us to be able to stay connected with our primary caregivers. Otherwise, we're dead, right? If we don't create some kind of bond with our primary caregivers, we're babies that are just left.
Right. You must.
Exactly. So what happens is we develop this brilliant pattern strategy of remaining in a system that may or may not be healthy for us. So the ideal is to develop a secure attachment, right? Which basically stems from good enough parenting. And that would be, someone who finds intimacy, but they can move in and out of that relationship with relative ease without losing themselves or their world being disrupted in a massive way, right? So they can be in relationship, but they can also have boundaries. They can keep their independence within the relationship, right? So it's like, you're one person, your partner is another person, and then together you make almost like a third person, right? That's a healthy, secure attachment. That's the ideal. About 50% of the population has that. Then we have, maybe less than perfect parenting, less than perfect, situations growing up, where maybe we had really absent parents. It's really common, with alcoholism or drug abuse, where the parents are just never emotionally available. So the child's nervous system adapts to this by developing what's called an avoidant attachment system. So that's something where the child learns to be basically an island unto themselves. So they learn that they don't actually need intimacy in order to function. In adulthood, what that ends up looking like is what you had described earlier about, just destroying your life when you find love or intimacy. What that feels like for someone with the avoidant attachment style is that as soon as intimacy gets close to them, they freak out, right? And it's not an external freak out, but that attachment system is like, whoa, danger.
Right, no, it's an internal freak out.
It's an internal freak out.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
So it sounds as though, and please correct me if I'm wrong, this, the opposite of the fuck it button is the no internal authority. You come into relationship and lose self completely, like total enmeshment with other and no sense of self. Is that the almost other way that we cope with that poor attachment style?
Well, it's interesting how you phrase that, because what you just described of, just immediately jumping into a relationship and then losing yourself totally is also a fuck it button. It's just a different fuck it.
Different manifestation of the same thing.
Exactly. So that's what we'd call the anxious attachment style, which is kind of polarizing for the avoidant. So it can kind of be at odds with each other. But in that scenario, you know, that person before entering relationship might have a lot of really awesome independent things going on in their lives, right? And then relationship, they get triggered in the same way, but what happens is they get enmeshed. So they completely lose themselves. So they're not saying fuck it to the relationship. They're saying fuck it to every other great thing that they have going on.
Like a self-abandonment.
Exactly. Yeah. And self-abandonment is the perfect word, because that's really the wound of the anxious attachment style, is instead of parents never being present in early childhood, parents are sometimes present, but then they take away that love, right? So love is conditional. It's, you know, sometimes there, sometimes not there, can't really figure it out, but the child learns to depend on that love and affection, but it's, they basically have a chronic abandonment wound. So what happens is they can never get enough intimacy, right? So polarizing to the avoidant attachment person who is really threatened by any and all intimacy, even with themselves, the anxious attachment person can't get enough. So that becomes a problem in relationship, because they may find, you know, a really great partner who's available to them, but it doesn't matter how available they are to them, that person is still not going to feel that it's enough. So they're still going to unconsciously fear being abandoned and chronically look for that in the relationship, even if it's not present. So they'll create it, right? And because they're terrified in their core that, you know, it's not a matter of if I'm going to be abandoned, but when, they will be the first to abandon themselves, which is what we're talking about with, you know, other things in life, right? Just, I'm going to abandon everything I've got going on so I can make sure that you're happy with me so that you'll never leave me.
Right. Right. A lot of people just cringed listening to this. So I want to, okay. So actually let's unpack that just one layer more, which is something at the beginning of that, you talked about how often these compulsions are unconscious. So I think that that's, like, I don't know if you can speak into that, but I think it is partly why we have so much trouble seeing our life in repeating patterns. So for example, I was almost content with the pattern, right? Like 2-3 year relationship, 2-3 year projects, and then kind of like pivot, blowing it all up and then starting over. There's something about myself, for example, that found safety in that. It wasn't until I blew up a relationship I actually wanted that I had to like really have a reckoning with self and be like, okay, how am I contributing to this problem that I now I don't want it, and yet it's still happening. And so that triggered the idea that, man, that maybe there's a bunch of things in us that are just completely unconscious that we're not aware of. Have you seen that? And also, how can people start to become aware of that?
Yeah, I mean, that's probably the most dominant thing, is that these patterns go, you know, unnoticed until something happens where suddenly it doesn't work anymore. Like for you, you know, these, you were kind of comfortable in whatever dysfunction was playing out in your life. You probably weren't even noticing that it was dysfunction, right? It was just the way that you did things, until it started to clash with this desire that you were creating to be, actually be in relationship with this person. And that pattern was still playing out, even though it was no longer working for you.
Totally.
Right. So that's where we have this, you know, very real clash between the unconscious autonomic nervous system and our very conscious prefrontal cortex of, okay, what do I want? What direction I'm going in? And then who's driving the bus, essentially, right? And with trauma, that disconnect is very real. You know, a lot of what sits in the unconscious mind, because of the trauma, our brains actually intentionally keep that separate from our prefrontal cortex, because there was a period in time in our lives where we were not capable of understanding, processing, managing what our experience was, usually, you know, in early childhood or later on. So that stuckness in the unconscious behavior is really our adult selves still feeling that the threat is real, right? So still feeling that that fragmentation needs to be there,
though we're not conscious of the threat.
Yes. Yeah. So that threat is, it's really embedded in the autonomic nervous system, right? So it's entirely unconscious, right? So it can feel like, you know, just this impending doom or this, you know, chronic anxiety, general unease, or it can sort of manifest as, you know, quick snap judgments in the brain, right? Oh, that person's just a shitty person, or that person's just doing this to me, right? All of these things. So how can we start to become conscious of that? Well, the first thing is to just get really clear about what's happening in your life, right? Are the things that you're doing working for you, right? What do you want? Where do you want to go? What's been getting in the way so far? You know, what are the patterns that tend to stop you from getting what you want? And then is what you're currently doing working for you, right? So just asking those questions and getting really clear on that can kind of help people sit back a little bit and have that wider perspective of, okay, even though I don't know what else to do, even though, you know, this is a pattern that I feel stuck in and I don't know how to change it, I am admitting to myself that it's not working, right? So that's the first step, is to just get really clear that it's not working. Because if you still feel that these patterns are, you know, serving you in some way, that you just need to, you know, have different affirmations, or you just need to work harder, or you just need, you know, to find the right person, you haven't found them yet, you know, whatever it is, if you still think that it's working for you, you're not going to have the motivation to get past the ick factor and the discomfort of actually looking within and dealing with your root causes to change the pattern, right? So you have to be really clear that it's not working.
Totally. And I think if I could also like maybe add something to that, which is, you might be the person that thinks it's working. And one thing that I've noticed is, if this is your MO, like if you have these sort of core safety patterning issues, what you might find is that your only tool in life is a hammer. Like, you don't have finesse. You don't have the ability to stay or go or decide. And instead, you become the one that just sort of plows through everything and hustles harder and works harder and just compensates in ways that are comfortable for you. And so if you find that you, and I don't know if you'd agree with this, but for me, I found I essentially had one tool for navigating life. And though I could get successful in the way that the world would validate that success, I could build things, I could, you know, I could just run through people, which the West just loves. But at the same time, like, then realizing that, like, oh, but I don't have even a different way. And so eventually only having one tool just causes some sort of collateral damage. It doesn't really matter whether that one tool is an outward masculine energy where you run things over, or an inward sort of shut down, leave the problem energy. It seems like if it's your only tool, chances are you're coping for something in some way that you can't allow yourself to have that, to pivot in that way.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that's no better environment, but for the military and veteran community where that is the case, right? Of, you know, seeing everything as a hammer. And it's so common, you know, to find that solace or that comfort or that external validation in, you know, external success, right? Of the doing, like you said, sort of that masculine energy, right? You know, so many people that I work with and that I talk to on a daily basis are really comfortable in how to succeed in the outside world, right? Like, that's not an issue. And that's their hammer, right? Of seeing that linear path of, you know, if I just do dot, 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 there's the end goal. I'll smash it out. It's going to be great. And, you know, that's how I've always done things. So it's going to be good. Right. But there's another side that is, you know, requires a different tool, like you're saying. And it's, you know, it's really scary because it's humbling for the individual, because it's like, whoa, you know, the way I thought, you know, was going to give me some kind of safety and reprieve and success, you know, in life, not just in the world, but, you know, I thought this was going to be my answer for everything. And now you're telling me that, you know, I might have a blind spot, or, you know, there might be something that I'm not good at. Right.
That's right.
That's something that a lot of, you know, especially high achieving men really feel not ready to accept, right? They don't want to be in that space of having to navigate something new that they may not be naturally good at, right? Which is a little bit of more of that self-reflection, that, you know, looking inwards, right? Because seeing everything as something to accomplish and something to tackle, right? Something with that doing energy, that is very effective as well at keeping emotions at bay, right? If you can keep yourself busy, if you can keep yourself high functioning, if you can keep yourself, you know, on a path of doing, it becomes very easy to avoid your internal world, right? So this is where a lot of people, you know, get into trouble when, you know, that works for them when they're still, you know, if they're still in the operator world, or if they're still, you know, going on deployments, or if they're still, you know, if they've still got things that they can do.
If they've got chaos to run into.
Oof.
Then the chaos they're running from, they don't have to deal with.
So good.
Yeah, straight up. I mean, like military, first responders, like yeah, we'll just leave it at that.
You couldn't have said it better, right? It's, you know, and like they're just so comfortable in that external chaos, right? Because it brings some kind of balance and equilibrium to the chaos that they already experience internally.
Totally.
So the problems arise when things start to slow down, right? So maybe, you know, what's super common is when somebody's about to leave and transition into civilian life, they sort of have this like instinct or inclination of like, you know, I'm ready to get out. I want to do something different, right? And they think, just like we talked about in the beginning, that the absence of that chaos and that fight or flight response is just going to be, you know, they'll feel connected and they'll feel good and they'll know what to do and it's going to be the right decision, right? But then as soon as they slow down, all of those self-protective mechanisms of, you know, external chasing and chaos and really relying on that sympathetic state to function, those are coping strategies that are no longer available. So it actually becomes the stillness and the quiet and the slower pace of life that brings all of these issues to the surface.
Could not agree more. Yeah, I you know, when I was in the military, I somewhat had a foot out because I always had companies, I always had, you know, the podcast going. And so I thought for me, when I transition, it will be seamless. Like I'm already there. I just put the other foot out, right? And what I found is I would be laying in my bed, like this is maybe 5-6 months after I transitioned. I got out and I backpacked for a while and allowed me to kind of stay in myself, right? Then I settle somewhere. I'm in Colorado. I'm laying in bed, can't sleep. And my heart rate's like 125 for no reason. Like, I'm like, man, what is going on? Like I cannot sleep. Heart rate is just through the moon. And that was actually, I was wearing a Fitbit at night and I saw it. Normally I would just dismiss my sleeping issues and like just crush myself with sleeping pills. And that was kind of the first like thing I noticed of, oh, there's something to the transition issue beyond just having something to do, right? Like having another purpose, because that's part of it. Like your purpose is tied up in something, but that's something that people experience everywhere. Another thing too, I'd love to hear your insight on it. You know, we're talking about veterans, but I see this as more of an underlying Western culture maybe issue, in that I think a lot of veterans enter the military with some kind of post-traumatic stress disorder. Like, again, the idea that a lot of people running toward chaos are also running from it. And I'd be interested to know if that's like what you've experienced as well, because I think there's a lot of inroads in this conversation for people that are also outside of the active duty or veteran community. Absolutely.
And it's really probably the most common thing that I see, right? Mm. Like, you know, without saying names, one of my clients kind of jokes that one of the worst things that he could have done was join the Marine Corps, right? Because he, you know, all of this stuff existed before that.
And like, oh, we'll celebrate you for your shit.
Yeah. Well, that's exactly it, right? And so we talked a little bit about the anxious and the avoidant attachment style, but further than that, and it's really, really common in, you know, the first responder community and veterans in the military, is also what's called the disorganized attachment style. So that's really that sort of, that attachment style feels really comfortable in chaos, right? So that's someone who in early childhood experienced a lot of inconsistency, a lot of chaos. So that attachment style develops where the people that they need to go to for their love, connection, and attachment are also the same people that cause them suffering and pain and are not safe, right? So the nervous system develops this sort of on-off experience of really being stuck and confused, right? So what happens is people who are familiar with that attachment style and are resonating with that right now, you know, they get really zen when shit hits the fan.
Oh, right? Interesting.
So they do very well in super chaotic environments already, right? So the more chaos there is, the more their nervous system feels regulated and relaxed because, like we said earlier, it matches their internal experience. So now the world is attuning to their nervous system. And they're like, ah, finally, you know, this makes sense to me. Whereas someone who may have a secure attachment style, when shit hits the fan, like they get activated, right? They're, you know, blood pressure rises, their eyes get big, they start sweating, right? They're like trying to figure out this.
The animal response for dealing with chaos, right?
Totally, totally. And it's completely natural and healthy, right? So someone with a disorganized attachment style, they don't have that threat response when there's chaos because they've always known that. That's what they grew up in. That's what their, you know, mammalian attachment system learned to be comfortable with, right? So they have that opposite reaction where when there isn't chaos going on, they're panicking, they're freaking out, right? And they often need drugs or, you know, they'll find chaos in a relationship, right? Just find the most chaotic relationship that you can find. People with that attachment style feel really uncomfortable when things are going well or when they're consistent, right? Because that's just so foreign to what they've ever experienced ever in their life and in their nervous system. And so, you know, consistency is the most activating thing for them, right? So a lot of people who have that attachment system, you know, especially a branch like the Marines, they're like, they love that, right? Because there's lots of yelling, lots of intensity, right? Lots of, you know, you're bound to be in some kind of chaotic environment, right? So it's basically an atmosphere that promotes and basically puts people on a pedestal who can deal with high, high, high levels of stress.
Right.
So someone with the chaotic attachment style or the disorganized attachment style is like, yes, this is how I get to keep this going in a socially acceptable way.
Right, right. It's like a physiological Stockholm syndrome. You know, you're like in love with your captor. So interesting. I mean, that's mine. I think that's my probably deepest shadow. It's like, hey, nothing's wrong. So let's break glass and make myself comfortable. So I'll make things wrong, you know? And that probably, right. So certain high threat jobs, like, as you're saying, they must bring that out in us or call us forward. Like we find almost belonging for who we are rather than going through the difficult work of trying to figure out who we actually want to be, maybe.
Yeah, exactly. It's really just functioning in the pattern that was given to you from not just your parents, but your parents' parents, their parents, you know, who knows, maybe hundreds and hundreds of years of patterning that's been passed down, you know, from generations of parenting. And then you've been given this structure of basically chaos and inconsistent parenting and mixed messages. And so naturally your nervous system just identifies with that because that's how the mammalian nervous system works. So we find these really chaotic environments, like you're saying, and they feel good. It feels like it's, you know, you're finally getting belonging, right? When really what's happening is now you're just in harmony with the internal experience that you're having and the external experience, which inherently there's nothing wrong with. However, it's really unsustainable and it usually stops working at one point or another, especially when we, you know, enter the realm of romantic relationships, right? Because you can't sustain that chaos in a long-term relationship.
Right. So what is that, what you mean by stops working? Like you essentially that's where that split happens, where you want something and can't let yourself have it.
Exactly. Yeah. So you're functioning in this pattern of chaos, and it feels, you know, normal, exciting, good for you, until, you know, you meet someone that you really, really like, and you don't want to repeat those same patterns. And so you tell yourself, I'm going to do things differently now. But surprise, surprise, those patterns still come up. And so now you're really at odds with, you know, what you want and what's just playing out in your life. So you get this feeling of being stuck, right? Of like, something's not working anymore. And not just, you know, romantic relationships, but, you know, even with your body, right? Like maybe starting and stopping at the gym, or, you know, chronically having this shutdown response. And so when you get to this place, this stuck place of one foot on the gas and one foot on the brake, or maybe this feeling of come here, no, go away, right? So just disorganized all over the place. The longer you're in that stuck place in your nervous system of having that conflict between what you want and what you know, then your system, basically, that's when you start moving towards feelings of apathy and numbness, right? Because it's just not working anymore. Mm-hmm. So that chaotic pattern, that on-off pattern, may have been working for you in the past. You know, maybe it helped you do really well at work, or you never really found a relationship that you cared enough to have that sticking power with. Whatever it was, it's worked for you, especially in childhood, until it doesn't. Right. And that's different. Someone's, you know, breaking point is different for everybody. Right. But it works until it doesn't.
Yep. Yep. And then, you know, and then you hit the escape button, and then that works until it doesn't, you know? And so you're just like, essentially, cause that's, I mean, for me, it was like, I spent my whole 20s just partying as hard as I could, but then I pushed the button too much. Like, it just stopped working, you know? And so it's very fascinating how, like, essentially what it sounds like the theme here is that nothing you do is going to be sustainable until you can come home to your own body, really.
That's really the foundation of all this, is coming back to the body and slowly creating new experiences for your nervous system that exist outside of that disorganized pattern. Mm-hmm. One of the reasons why it's so hard to break out of these patterns is, even when they're no longer working, your nervous system doesn't know anything different, right? So our nervous system's only job is to keep us alive, right? So if our nervous system is almost like, let's imagine it's functioning as like a computer program in these patterns, anxious, avoidant, disorganized. And, you know, you want to do things differently. Your nervous system has no idea what that looks like. So what it perceives is just blackness. Right? Because all it knows is this computer program that it's been living its whole life, which is highly disorganized, right? So even though that might sound uncomfortable, it's really familiar, and it's just the program, right? So as soon as you start moving into something that is consistent, or something that actually, you know, gets you what you want, because your nervous system doesn't know what that looks like and has no real, you know, format for understanding that, no real conception of what that means, it will perceive it as potentially life-threatening, because our nervous system just, you know, it's not, you know, our prefrontal cortex, it's not that part of the brain that has that beautiful problem solving and sequencing pattern, right? This is a much older mammalian part of our brain, right? So it's basically just like on off. So when we start to break these patterns, it's hard, because we think that we're doing something simple, i.e. creating consistency in our lives. Really, our nervous system is having a threat response that is akin to feeling like we might die.
Right.
So that's where that fuck it button comes in every time, right? Because naturally, if you don't understand what's going on, you get that heightened reaction in your body, and your nervous system's like, this is bad. Don't know why, but this is bad, or something bad's going to happen. Like, who do you think you are, expecting good things to last? Like, that other shoe is going to drop. You better believe it. When it drops, it's going to drop hard, right? So we have all these like experiences. And so if you're not prepared, you know, to understand that and be able to navigate that, naturally, you're just going to say, well, fuck that. I'm going to go do what, you know, what I've always done.
Yeah. Right?
And so that's where that self-sabotage pattern, or those on-off patterns, perpetuate themselves and why it's so hard to break out of it. So anyone listening right now, I just want to give them permission to like take so much weight off of their shoulders that, you know, it's really not their fault. Like their nervous system is wired this way to keep them safe, right? Because the nervous system thinks that it's protecting you from a potential threat that may be akin to death.
Right, right. Like you're totally stuck in patterns and not reality, really.
Absolutely, yeah. And you don't have access to your prefrontal cortex when you're activated like that. When the autonomic nervous system takes over because you're moving into a new way of being and it doesn't feel safe, you actually recede from your prefrontal cortex. So you don't have access to, you know, logically dissecting that, right?
Right. So
logically, you can tell yourself like, of course consistency is safe. Of course, all of these things, like, why can't I have a relationship? All this makes sense, but your nervous system is telling you a completely different story.
Yeah.
Right. So, yeah.
So if that, so I, something that you brought up right there, sort of waiting for the other shoe to drop, might be another way that somebody who is living these unconscious patterns can make themselves aware of it, right? Because that's me. I've always had it in my head, like God doesn't give with both hands. And so if something good happens, like I'd rather ruin it or I'd rather leave before it can ruin me. And so perhaps for people that are living out these unconscious patterns might recognize some of that belief system in themselves.
Yeah, absolutely. Especially if they function in that disorganized pattern, they're for sure going to recognize that, you know, especially the when is the other shoe going to drop analogy. Yeah. That's a super familiar one for people. And, you know, I'm sure that people are wondering like, okay, got it. I identify, that's me. Now what, right? And that's also super common in sort of a masculine type energy, right? Like, hey, got it. How do I get there? Right?
Yeah, how do I beat the game? What are we doing? Yeah. How do I win?
You know, something that shows up is, you know, once my clients like really get this and they identify with and they're like, oh my gosh, that is me. You know, mm-hmm. Like those are some answers. They're like, all right, now show me how to heal because I'm going to heal, you know, better than anyone you've ever seen. Like, show me how to heal and I'm going to do it, right? And it's like, whoa, whoa, whoa. You know, awesome. Like, I'm so glad you're motivated and you're ready for this, right? But that attitude is actually what we need to pull back from. Right? Because what the nervous system really needs now is safe, secure, consistent relationship with themselves and with somebody else in order for their autonomic nervous system to rewire the damage that was caused by relationship in relationship, right? So those moments when you're, you know, starting to make a change and you've got all this figured out, you understand the theory of it and you identify with it. And now you're trying to make the changes and things are going well. And then that rising anxiety starts to come in of like, you know, God doesn't give with two hands. When's the other shoe going to drop? This is how it's always been, right? The key is to then move towards that safe, secure, and consistent attachment with another person. And basically, you know, bring that to light, right? Like I'm super activated right now. My pattern is up, right? I feel like I want out. I feel that I have to do something different. I feel that something bad is going to happen, right? And bringing that to that new safe and secure attachment and that other person holding space for that. Like, I see you. I understand that. That makes sense. Remember where this is coming from. Remember the direction that you're going in. It inherently will not feel comfortable. You're going to be okay. Keep putting that one foot in front of the other. And so then the person, you know, their inner child, so to speak, gets permission to walk that path that they've never walked before, you know, in baby steps of like, oh, right. And because that's kind of the root pattern that their nervous system has experienced, it's going to keep coming back. Right? We say new level, new devil, right? So every time that person, you know, enters, you know, whether they want to move forward in a business or they want to do their own coaching practice or they want to move forward in the relationship, right? That pattern, that disorganized pattern is going to come back, right? And the trick is feeling safe enough to be present with that experience as an adult long enough that your nervous system can rewire it as being safe.
And so this rewiring is possible.
It is absolutely possible. Yeah.
That's important, I think, for people to know, because I think a lot of people dismiss themselves as hopeless at some point in all this cycle we're talking about.
Absolutely. Yeah. And, you know, especially the hopeless piece is actually a part of that pattern, right? Our brains just naturally go there when we're stuck in these patterns and we have, you know, so much resistance towards the things that we want and the things that we're doing, right? It can feel hopeless, and it's absolutely possible to move towards a secure attachment style, which is basically like the golden nugget for everyone, right? We want to always be moving on that spectrum towards more secure, and it's absolutely possible. And, you know, here's the good news about being a mammal and having this attachment system that develops so early in life. It really develops around relationships, right? So here's where connection becomes a biological imperative, right? Because a lot of people, because of their trauma backgrounds and their chronic interruption of connection in early childhood, they learn to feel safer doing things on their own, right? So they want the solution in isolation. But the solution to move your nervous system towards a secure attachment is actually to move into relationship again, but in a new, safe, and consistent container, right? So that can be with a coach like me, but it can also be, you know, with any kind of therapy or counseling that you feel comfortable with. It can be with, you know, a solid friend who's, you know, shown up for you consistently. It can be in, you know, a safe, consistent romantic partner. It can be in any kind of 12-step group, right, where you're showing up and consistently to this non-judgmental space, right? So there's so many ways that you can get that secure, consistent attachment. But it's so hard because that's the very thing that your nervous system perceives as a threat.
Right, right. And this is moving into that secure.
Yes.
So this is another place I feel in Western culture that we validate ourselves with our problematic patterns, which is like, you know, everyone says growth only happens when you're uncomfortable, and then we go get uncomfortable in ways we're comfortable getting, right? When it's uncomfortable to stay and that's how you grow, it's like, no, but I can run an ultra marathon. You know, that was like, for example, my exact narrative. So I love that you're bringing that up, because it sounds like for people that are growth minded, it's like, well, this is the work, you know, this is the uncomfortable work that will allow you to build a real foundation that you can then grow out of, right? And not consistently chasing, blowing up and chasing. Like, that style of growth, again, as you said, probably only works until it doesn't.
Yeah, and that, you know, comes back to what we spoke about at the beginning of our conversation, is that, you know, people need to get really clear first whether or not what they're doing is working for them, right? Mm-hmm. Because if they're not ready to change their patterns, they're not going to have the stick with it power when things get really hard in staying, sure. Right? So that's the step one. And then, you know, a caveat of all this is that staying not only allows you, you know, over time to have these really fulfilling relationships and, you know, be consistent with all things in your life. And we know that consistency with anything is going to produce some kind of fruitful result, right? As long as you stay consistent with something, you're going to create something beautiful, right? But also, once you start functioning outside of these patterns, outside of, you know, the trauma that's been embedded in your family lineage, you do get that beautiful opportunity to figure out who you are and to be intrinsically motivated with your full safe spectrum of emotional experience, so that you get this really delicious, awesome, powerful internal compass that can actually effectively guide you towards the things that bring you purpose and fulfillment and satisfaction in your life. Right? Because the trauma patterns are not doing that. The trauma patterns are just trying to keep you safe. They're not trying to bring you in the direction of curiosity, possibility, expansion, right? They're more contracting and suspicious and fearful, right? So just trying to keep you safe.
Right. So this is, that's a perfect sort of full circle moment. How, you know, one thing I've heard you say often is this idea of relationship. I noticed in my own life, it's like, you know, in the West, as we said at the very beginning, like we're really good at treating symptoms, right? Never the root cause. And so what that might look like, for example, because your entire life is a relationship, like money, for example, you can learn how to manage money in, I mean, 6 months, if you like really dedicate it to yourself, you could understand the stock market, you can understand all of it really. But until your relationship with money is such that allows you to have it and keep it and feel secure in it, you'll continue to spend it all far beyond what you have. And so that's just one way in which, like, once you, as you're saying, as you create a better container relationship to self, you'll have all of these other manifestations, like your relationship to other things will most likely be better. I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, but that's what it sounds like, is a lot of external things. We can go treat the symptoms. We can go to anger management. We can go to a financial class. But then at the end of the day, the root cause is really that relationship to self.
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, you really nailed it on the head there, because like I said, that autonomic nervous system is responsible for how we relate to all things in our lives. Mm-hmm. So it's, you know, how you relate to one thing with that lens is how you relate to everything in your life. So when you do, you know, come back to self and you can start having these disconfirming experiences that are contrary to what your trauma is telling you, you do get this amazing opportunity to relate differently to all things in your life, including your finances, including your career, right? Your relationship with fitness, whatever you want, everything in your life will become more consistent. Right. And I see that happening. You know, it's not only has it happened in my life and my partner's life, but I also get to witness it happening in my clients' lives as well. And like the way that, you know, their lives just start to expand and unfold in these like amazing ways, it's actually incredible. Right. When you look back at some of their histories and their past, it's, you know, a lot of people would say it's impossible. It's impossible to get from there to there. And, you know, I get to be in this amazing privileged position of seeing that, hey, that's not true.
Right, right.
You know, even the worst cases of this disorganized pattern can move towards a secure attachment style and just like explode their lives in like ways that were just not even possible to imagine before.
Right? Yeah.
Yeah, everything becomes more secure and consistent and fun.
And that's, you know, that's good news, right? Because that means you don't have to plug all the holes, right? Because most people who feel as though their life is kind of a mess, it's like chasing those symptoms is actually exhausting and miserable. And so working on the one relationship that you have the most probably autonomy over or agency over or ability to affect, the fact that there's all these good downstream effects, that's really good news, actually.
It's incredible news. It's like, I want to just like shout it out to everyone, right? Because that was my experience as well. That's what got me into this work, is because I was trying to find all of these holes and fill them up, you know, with my own trauma of like, why, you know, why are these patterns repeating themselves? You know, let me go into fitness. Let me go into wellness, you know, what meditation, alternative therapies. Like I wanted all of the answers. And like you said, it's exhausting.
Totally.
So when I finally found this missing piece of, you know, rewiring the nervous system from the root foundation, like, whoa, this changes everything. And this is a lot less work.
Totally.
Right.
Yeah. So, I mean, there are a million ways I would love to take this conversation from here. We're coming up on an hour. So I do hope that someday there's a part two. For people that are listening to this and they do want to work with you or follow along with your work, like what's the best way for people to engage with your work and support what you're doing?
Yeah. So my main platform right now is on Instagram. So that's bodybyjules11. So you can find a lot of my content there. I am going to be creating some workshops and eventually some longer term programs where people can really digest this information in a little bit more of a structured way in the future. That's not ready yet, but that will be coming. So stay tuned, you know, follow me on Instagram to kind of find out when that's happening. And then if somebody, you know, if they feel inspired and motivated and it's a full body yes to explore this further, they can book a consultation with me on my Instagram. and we can kind of explore what one-on-one coaching looks like that way.
Wonderful. A full body yes. Maybe that's what we'll call this episode. Jules, thank you so much for joining me and just sharing your wisdom with my audience. It's been a great conversation, truly enlightening.
Yeah, it's my pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Cool. Thanks, guys.